Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do inside the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about.
That being said, let's trek further down the path of
50% of music is 100% mental. Okay, so Jake knows this, and some other people out there in the world know this, but I am a big Yankee fan. And The great Yankee, Yogi Berra, once said, baseball is 90% mental and the other half is physical. So, you know, Yogi was a funny guy. He was charismatic. He was always joking around. But this wasn't really a joke, you know. It's a funny way to say something that's absolutely true, which is how important the mental game is in sports. Before we relate this to music, I'm just going to do a little bit more on baseball, so bear with me just a little bit more, and I promise this is going to turn around full circle. Steve Sax was a baseball player in the 80s. He was a five-time All-Star. He won two World Series rings, and you know he was an all-around great player. In 1983, for no explicable reason at all, he became incapable of making routine throws to first base. Man. He committed like 30 errors that season, Jesus. And it was so bad that in the world of baseball, they called it Steve Sax syndrome.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, it is horrifying. There was no breakdown in his mechanics that they could see. There was nothing physically wrong with him. There was just a mental block going on. He made an error, and then the next time, he might have thought about it, and he made another error, and then he just started making errors and errors. And all of a sudden, this seasoned baseball player couldn't throw a ball to first base. It also happened with Chuck Knoblauch in 2000. Again, I'm a Yankees fan, and Chuck Knoblauch was on the Yankees, and this guy was a great fielder. And all of a sudden, he just couldn't make routine throws to first base. And the more time he had to throw the ball, the less likely he'd make the play. If it was a bang-bang play, meaning someone was running really fast on the line, he could make a throw and get the guy out. But if he had time to think about it, it would go into the stands. It made no sense, right?
Muscle memory, reflex.
Yeah, exactly. When he wasn't thinking about it, he could make it every time. But this relates 100% to music, and I'll explain why.
Man, you Yankees got a lot of problems over there, huh?
So if we're relating this to music, you're getting what, Jake? How much you make, 30, 35 million a year? Like, you know, like Garrett Cole or A-Rod?
Yeah, it depends. Tom Cruise is my agent. He's always just showing me a bunch of money.
Yeah, exactly. So this is how it relates to music. If you're in a specific scene, if it's LA, New York, Nashville, a college, whatever the case is, whatever scene you're in, there's a lot of students or musicians or whoever practicing similar things. There's only so many things to practice. If you're in college and you're in one school, there's actually a curriculum, right? So a lot of people are practicing similar things. Everyone has their personal teachers and they're working on their own stuff, but there's only so many scales and so many notes and all that stuff.
Yeah, and some people go faster than others. There's a lot of things to be jealous about too in a situation like that. Some people just wake up and just know how to do this stuff, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah, but that being said, there's a lot of people that have the same skills, and what makes them perform better? What makes certain people perform better under the lights in the right situations, right? Well, a lot of this has to do with your mental approach and just your resilience. It's really about your mental outlook. I mean, the music business and just life in general is filled with bumps and potholes and earthquakes and volcanoes and tornadoes and droughts and I don't know what other natural disaster you want to throw at it, right? The thing is, it's really about how you react to these situations, because you can't do anything to prevent, let's say, a volcano, right? Or at least we don't know how to yet. Maybe aliens know how to, or L. Ron Hubbard knew or something.
He definitely knew.
He seems to know a lot. No, but I don't know, right? But what you can do is adjust your way of dealing with these situations, right? For instance, I wrote an article on My Music Masterclass a while back, and I referenced this story with Django Reinhardt because it's just so cool. You know, Django Reinhardt, he lost his third and fourth finger on his left hand, his third and fourth fingers on his left hand in a caravan fire because he was a gypsy. And you know, a lot of people would have quit, right? I mean, you say, hey, I don't know, I got to do something else or try to figure out what to do. He relearned how to play in that situation and became pretty much the baddest jazz guitarist of all time. It's hard to deny it. Now, you may or may not have a physical handicap like Django, but the music business, and again, life, will find ways to throw shit at you, and you're going to have to deal with it. So I always tell people how important it is to have this kind of survivor-type attitude in the music business because of the fact that you're a freelancer and you're human and you have to deal with all these things.
It doesn't even have to be survivor either. It can be creative. You can find fun, you know, fun in it.
Absolutely.
You know, like, it's, if you know what a problem is, you can always find creative ways to solve it. It's just not going to happen instantly. That's where the survivor in you has to come out. You have to like put work into it. Like the other day, I was in a recording session and we were just dropping solos and doing takes, and I got really frustrated. And after that, I kind of went home. I was like, all right, I need to start a new regimen. I'm going to just play melodies. I'm going to listen to a song and just learn the melody to that song. And that's it, because my solos are missing melody, you know? So instead of being completely frustrated, I came up with a way to just at least attack it. So it helps when you start stressing out about it. You're like, oh, I'm actively doing something. So it's, I feel better about it already, you know?
Yeah, Jake. I mean, it sounds like you lost a little confidence in that. And that's kind of what we want to talk about here. You know, confidence is one of the most important and overlooked things as a musician. I mean, I'll get more into this later on in the podcast, but essentially, if there's two musicians with the same skill set and one has confidence and the other doesn't, it's night and day on stage.
Yeah, it's a world of difference. Yeah. And it doesn't even matter the size of the stage either. It's just, it's apparent like anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't even have to be on stage even. You know, I mean, it could be a recording studio. It could be absolutely anything. Sometimes it's just how someone walks around.
Yeah, but I would actually compare that to what people call star power. I think that phrase comes from confidence. And honestly, it's more how you conduct yourself even outside of your instrument. It's just obvious, you know, and that can be worked on. Everyone can have that.
Yeah, I mean, I used to make this analogy with people where I would talk about rhythm, because as a bass player, I used to play with a lot of drummers, you know, obviously. I mean, we all play with drummers, but I was always right next to the drummer and very, very in tune with what they were doing. I found that the best drummers had that no inner voice criticizing them as they were playing. Maybe after they played, you know, people get self-deprecating and all that, but not on stage. No. On stage, they would just play it and feel it.
It's such a physical instrument too.
Yeah, and as soon as that voice comes into your head and says, am I dragging? You start dragging. You know what I mean? Or you start rushing because you say, am I dragging? And you compensate. But if those thoughts enter into it, you're kind of screwed. You have to just trust yourself. And a lot of that has to do with what you do in the practice room and being prepared and just letting it all go when you're on stage. And, you know, we can talk about that more later, but I just wanted to put that in there. So why are some musicians blocked? Why do they lose their confidence? Well, the first thing might be rejection. As I've said a lot of times, and as I'll continue to say, and as a lot of people will say on this podcast, rejection happens all the time. And it's okay. It's part of the business. You know, I've been rejected probably 8 out of 10 times in general as a musician, whether it was in the composition world, licensing, with, you know, getting in touch with music supervisors or doing auditions for artists, or, I mean, you don't get a lot of those things. I mean, you're very lucky if you get half, right? I mean, that would be, you'd be a superstar at that point.
You could even look at it as like casting. I think it's safer to even look at it like that.
Right.
Like casting is, they're looking for a certain thing, a certain role for something very specific. You put your 2 cents in and they're just like, yeah, that's not what we're looking for right now. That's it. Like if you can get on that level of just like, it's fine. They didn't need you for that. it has nothing to do with you being good enough. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's just mindset.
It's the same thing with relationships. When someone is looking for a significant other, you don't look at every person and say, you know, that person definitely should be with me. And if they're with someone else, like, what the hell? Like, why are they with that person? You know, yeah. Like, you don't, I mean, you shouldn't do that. I guess some
That's
people
definitely
do
unhealthy.
That,
but, that would be bad.
Yeah, but it's true. It's a relationship, right? So in bands, in different situations, it's still a relationship. And you might have been great for that group as well, or whatever situation that you've auditioned for, or someone else got in, or whatever the case is, but it doesn't mean you're the only person that can do it, or, you know, that you're the best person to do it. Sometimes it's just okay all around, and you just have to deal with how the water flows. Another thing that I see a lot is abusive teacher or educational situations where the student gets so beat down that they kind of never recover from it. Whiplash, the movie, if you haven't seen it, went way too far. I've never, ever seen anything that abusive because it's Hollywood. It was a very effective movie, but...
Well, and because J.K. Simmons is just awesome when he freaks out. They're like, we need more of that.
Oh, man, it was great. Yeah, it was great. But wasn't that truthful, but I have seen a lot of abusive and dark teachers just basically tell their students that they suck. And if you hear that you suck enough times... You might start to believe it, or it might take you years of therapy to get out of that one, you know?
Yeah. Teaching is tough, too. I mean, there's some aspect of, like, sometimes they can be a little bitter, depending on what happened in their own career. I mean, I don't like to say that, but sometimes it's a case like that. Or other times, it's just students don't practice, and teachers get so frustrated. And we all kind of, you know, I've been guilty of that. You get excited about something, and then you go home and you don't really work on it that much. And you come back to class and it's obvious you didn't work on it. And then the teacher's just pissed. That's not an excuse. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, dealing with that every day from hundreds of students, they kind of go a little crazy and can be a little rough. But it still sucks.
Yeah, I mean, students in general are more fragile maybe than the seasoned pro, at least in theory, right?
Yeah.
Because they're learning and you're supposed to be this powerful or more of a power figure when you're a teacher and showing the person the ropes. So it's a drag that this happens. It's terrible, but it does happen sometimes. And you're right. Like there are some teachers that I've known, I won't name any names, that are famous musicians, but they're pissed that they had to teach. Like I had a teacher once that was pissed that he had to teach. I don't even want to say anything close to his name, but he was a famous bass player, and he told me that he was pissed that he had to teach, you know, and he acted like that. You know, that comes across, and it doesn't always lead to, you know, the best student-teacher relationship, but, you know, you have to get through it and get what you can from that person, because the fact is that although my teacher in that situation was kind of a dick. He was great, and I did learn from watching him. Maybe not from what he said all the time, but from being next to him and watching what he did, for sure.
Yeah, it's like you filtered out what you needed. I mean, a great musician is a great musician. You can learn from them just being in a room with them. I mean, that's part of school being so important in a lot of ways, too. But you also get that from students, and you can have terrible experiences from students, too. You know, people not bringing you into their cliques because you're not like the fancy kid that plays super fast and is awesome. And
yeah, and we can talk about that next, because that was something I wanted to go into. You know, when kids get into college, or, you know, they don't have to be kids. Hey, kids, you know. No, when students first get into college, depending on where they came from, they're probably the big fish of their town. I mean, granted, I went to Manhattan School of Music, and you know, Berkeley is another one, and there's some big music schools, and there's competition in Juilliard and, you know, USC and all these schools. They have really good music programs, and there's a lot of kids that go there, and they're talented. So if you go to a pretty well-known music program, it's going to be that kind of situation where you're going to have a lot of young people with their own egos and adjusting to the situation of being away from home for the first time and being in an extremely deep talent pool. And it's really hard for some people to adjust to that.
I would say it's even hard for the kids that are really talented too, because they get to that school. You know, we never think about that flip side of like, oh, they have everything. They're so great. It's like, yeah, well, now they have a ton of pressure too. So maybe it's not that easy for them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, and this also goes hand in hand with the having an abusive teacher thing, is that if you're in a situation, let's say with an abusive teacher, going back to that, you have to just keep your head down, believe in yourself, and just work on what you have control over and not really worry about the external stimulus. And the same goes for being in school. If you have a big talent pool at your school and there's a lot of different cliques and maybe you're not in them and you see so-and-so and they made the A band, being the highest band or whatever it is, a big band or orchestra or whatever situation you're in, and don't get jealous. Don't look at all these people and get depressed because you're not that person. Just keep your head down and work on what you need to work on to be better and develop yourself in your own way. And you'll see that a lot of the music school stars don't end up being stars. Some do and some don't, but it really has to do with what you do. Sometimes people bloom later. Like, I knew some people at music school that were the top picks of the department and they didn't really do much in their careers. And then I knew people that were kind of just working by themselves and a little bit more subdued and not really that they didn't stand out as much, and they became much more successful in their careers.
Do you have the advantage of the eyes looking somewhere else, man? You get to go work on your own craft. No one bothers you. Yeah. You can go in and out of these scenes. You can pop in, you know, to Wally's and be like, yeah, that's going on. That's cool. Like, I'll put a little of that in my practice, sprinkle a little of that in my practice. I mean, you have total freedom. No one's going to bother you. You get to, like,
wow, your name dropping Wally's.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been there in so long. I hope it's still there.
For those of you who don't know, Wally's is in Boston. So that's a Berkeley reference. There's a lot of Berkeley kids that play at Wally's. That's for sure.
Yeah. But it's just, it's peaceful, you know, and there's no pressure other than you get to be your own musician. Like, that's an advantage. I look at that as an advantage. I think that's great.
It's also a mental state you have to put yourself in, saying, all right, I'm confident in the path I'm going to take. I really want to do this kind of thing. I don't really care that everyone's playing hollow bodies here and they want to sound like Wes Montgomery or whatever the case is. I want to do this. And if people give me shit for it, that's okay. Like, I just want to be me. That's cool. Or, you know, you don't even have to be that deep. You don't even have to know exactly what you're going to be. Just put your head down and work on what you want to work on and be happy to be there and be happy to be learning. Be happy the fact that you have the opportunity to be in music school, for God's sake. I mean,
yeah, no kidding. Right?
You know, yeah, I mean, that's the bigger thing. You know, I've been in different countries where, you know, people couldn't afford strings for their instruments, yet let alone a music school that costs like multi-thousands of dollars a year. So, yeah, be grateful for sure.
Plus, I always look at the OG Nicholson Batman when he's Joker. He says, you know, he's like, wait till they get a load of me. Like, that line is so good. He's going to blossom on his own time, and he's going to be completely unique. It's obviously got bad connotations as a Joker, but in your own life, I think that's a good mentality to have. You know, it's going to be me, not going to be trying to be anybody else, you know?
Yeah, man, a Joker reference. Yeah. It's kind of creepy, but I like it.
Yeah.
Another thing that can kind of block musicians or, you know, create some of this lack of motivation, depression, anxiety, all these things, is a traumatic musical situation, some kind of form of PTSD, for real. I mean, most people think of PTSD as something that happens after a traumatic accident, but it doesn't have to be. It can be anything. And with music, if you're, for instance, you're on a gig and you sit, or like a jam session, you go to sit in, you go to this club, and someone calls a tune on you and you don't know it, and you just, it's a train wreck. You just totally screw it up. And everyone looks at you, and the drummer's vibing you, and they say, hey, get off the stage. Or,
yeah. I mean, it's the Charlie Parker story.
Yeah. But if that happens, it's kind of like, how do you deal with that? A lot of people, have had situations like that where they just never bounce back. I know a violist that was at Manhattan School of Music and didn't graduate because she got stage fright about 3/4 of the way school, and she didn't graduate within like 5 credits just because she got scared to play in front of people. And she was very, very talented, you know, classical violist. It happens with all kinds of people. And, you know, for one reason or another, and you just have to figure out what it is that triggered it and how to deal with that situation.
Sometimes it's easy too. Like I had a situation, I had an audition and it was like a rock kind of thing. It was sort of out of my wheelhouse, but I was new to the city. I wanted to do it to see kind of what it was like. And there was a solo coming up and like I had my pedals just scattered. I wasn't fully organized yet. And I went to do the solo and my wah-wah pedal like didn't work. And I went, instead of just playing, I kind of went for the pedal and tried to fix it in the middle of it. It was just like a train wreck audition. And I felt it was just the worst thing ever. And then I was like, wow, okay, I have a lot to think about. Like I have a lot to think about organizing my gear. Maybe, you know, even being overprepared would have been good in that situation. Because I wouldn't have panicked if I was like overprepared. I thought I was prepared enough, but I wasn't, you know. So you learn from this stuff. But I didn't want to ever go on an audition ever again. I was so freaked out.
But it's important to get back on the horse.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's two ways to go about it, right? Like, let's say that you didn't know a specific standard and someone, and you're a jazz player, and someone calls it on the gig and everyone else knows it and you don't, and you get laughed off stage or whatever the case is. You can either never go to that jam session again or learn the crap out of that song.
Yeah.
And not just that, but learn a bunch more and just say, you know what, not only this tune, but I'm going to go to that jam session like incognito in the back, not bring my instrument and just bring a recorder. I'm like my phone.
Yeah,
and
so
I'm
going to
record every tune that they play for 3 weeks.
I love it.
And then I'm going to learn every one of those tunes in 12 keys and I'm going to come back and shred and no one's going to trip me up again.
Nope.
So that's the way to counter a situation like that. You know?
And you don't even have to be that dramatic about it. Like as far as like, you don't have to go back to the scene and fix it, right? You can pick someone out of that band that was in there and try to hang with them. And then they get to know you and they're like, oh, he's actually a really good player. Like that was just a shitty night for them. Like there's so many ways to fix it. You just, you know, don't just throw it all away, you know?
No, and you could go back. Like I'm a proponent in like—
You're crazy.
Actually, yeah, no, I'm insane. But I would go back to completely prepared and just show everyone that I could do it, you know?
I love it. You're going for the movie scene.
Yeah. I go for the movie scene, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
and
like
then if
total...
I fail twice, then I'm like, screw it. I try my best, you know?
That's the Adam Small like character arc of that film. I love it. I'm too chicken shit to do that.
No, I would totally go back. But, you know, and you just want to – I like to show people that I'm not scared. Or at least in my career, I've always done that. Even if I am scared, you still want to show people that you're not nervous and that it was a mistake and that you're at the level. But regardless of how you deal with that situation, it is important to prepare so that that situation does not arise again, so that you don't – it can be in the back of your mind, right? The reason that these mental blocks happen is because
you don't attack them.
Yeah.
You got to attack them. Go right for them, man.
Yeah. The reason these mental blocks happen is because something happened and you never really figure out how to deal with it. You know, like you said, you had a pedal problem, but if you had a second line of gear, it wouldn't have happened, right?
Yeah.
If you had some kind of backup or if you don't know a specific tune or if you were rushing really bad, then work on your time. Like there's remedies for all these situations. And if you deal with it, the next time you get on the gig, if something else happens, then okay, then you deal with that situation. Or, you know, you could always have a negative experience. They happen all the time, you know?
Yeah.
But hopefully the one that just happened doesn't happen again.
And when you do attack it, like you said, you'd go back. When you go back and you get on stage again, like you just upped your confidence level forever. Like by 200%. Like you had a problem, you did the work, you solved it, you went back to the scene of the incident and then just crushed it. You are now way more confident of a player forever.
Absolutely. So just to keep this in perspective about, you know, how to bounce back or how important it is, All right, you guys might know of a guitarist named Jimi Hendrix. He's a dude. He's some guy. And he was booed off the stage in one of his early performances when he opened for the Monkees in front of like a huge audience. It was the Monkees. And and that was before you knew his name, right? So he didn't say, oh, man, I'll never make it. Like, the Monkees audience hates me. You know, he just said, you know what? That's the Monkees audience, and, like, I'm different than that, and I'm going to go and get my shit together and be Jimi Hendrix and, you know, and be super famous.
He probably listened to this podcast you know? In the future because he was that badass. He probably traveled to the future and listened to our podcast.
You don't think he died? You think he actually he transcended?
I think he's been time traveling.
Interesting. I don't know how that works, but. Okay, so as we talked about before, you know, the power of confidence is super important. This is kind of how we started this podcast. It's really important to be confident. Now, don't get that twisted with being self-deprecating. A lot of the musicians that I know that are super A-list and often the ones we film, they think they suck, right? Or they're like, oh, I sound like shit, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that's different than not being confident. When they're on stage, there's no one more confident than these people.
Yeah, like, it doesn't even affect them. It's weird.
But yeah, they always think they have to work on something. They're always practicing.
I think it's like an inner drive, I feel like. It's almost like a survival instinct for an artist to just always want to be better. So they just always put themselves down. And it's not a good language to have in your head, but it kind of makes sense if you think about it like that. You know, no one else is going to tell you. No one ever tells people, hey, man, you could be way better. Those 16th note runs aren't that cool. Like, no one's going to say that.
That'd be
shit.
So blunt. Well, some people do. Some people do say that. But they're the people that don't have networking skills, right? No.
Yeah, exactly.
But the truth is that it's okay to be critical of your playing and self-deprecating and saying, you know, I could do that better. I listen to myself. It's hard to hear me play. It's hard to listen to myself on records. I don't want to, you know, a lot of people do that. But at the same time, when they play with this blazing confidence.
Hell yeah.
And they know they're at the level. It's never that. They never doubt themselves while they're playing. They just want to be better. And there's a difference.
I like that we actually sorted that out. I've never thought of that.
One thing that you don't want to manifest inside yourself is anxiety and depression because of these musical situations. For instance, if one of those situations that we were talking about before, like you do a sit-in at a jam session and it goes terrible, you know, I mean, it's a train wreck. You don't want to get depressed over that if you can avoid it. Now, I'm not a therapist. My wife is, but I really don't claim to be. And so I know that some people battle with, you know, clinical depression and anxiety, and this is completely chemical. I mean, if that is your thing, you know, your psychiatrist or psychologist or therapist of any kind can help you with that. That being said, in a situation where you can deal with it or talk your way through it, this is the dialogue you have to have with yourself.
You have to look at it, too, as a long game. You have to, you know, luckily musicians are disciplined and we understand what the long game is of working on something every day and seeing a result over weeks and months and years. You sort of have to put this in that department. So you got to be patient with yourself, but you have to change the dialogue in your head with this stuff. I mean, and yeah, if it's that serious, then you need to talk to someone and they'll help you do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at them like you're like your teacher. They're going to give you what to practice every day. And then you're going to take that, and your practice room just happens to be your own head and your own life. But it works. Like you can, you know, fix this kind of stuff and just change how you feel. But it takes time.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same with sports. Like I started this whole thing out on the baseball tip. Like, you know, 20 years ago, performance coaching and, you know, performance psychologists and things like that weren't really a thing. They were a thing, but it wasn't that mainstream. Now, major franchises, sports teams, have on staff people to help people with their mental game, you know, performance coaches, to talk about, you know, believing in yourself and visualization or whatever the case is. I mean, it's not some hippie stuff. Like, if you need to talk to someone about this, it can be really valuable. And remember, however you have to get your head together, just do it. I mean, it's important. I mean, not just for music, obviously, for everything. We touched on this a little bit, but the next thing I want to talk about is anger and resentment. Again, if you see someone get a gig and you think that you should get that gig, you got to get over it. Like, that's just a form of resentment, right? You're resenting that so-and-so is in this band and you think you could do a better job, or you're mad at, you know, that you got fired from a situation, or, you know, you just got to deal with it and think it through. When we were talking to Miles Okazaki, he was talking about, you know, if he got fired from a gig, he'd go home and instead of being pissed off, he'd be like, well, what could I have done better to not get fired, you know? And if it just came to the fact that maybe the gig, the band leader was just an asshole, like, okay, you know, maybe that is it. And maybe you can come to that realization. But a lot of times it could be, well, maybe I was late three times. You know, maybe I shouldn't be late. Or maybe the guy that's doing the gig now can play, he doubles. He's not just, you know, you're a bassist and he can play upright and electric or whatever the case is. Or he can sing or she can sing. Like, they got this new bassist and she can sing backgrounds and I'm a terrible singer, you know? And having a chip on your shoulder, it just never works out. Like, I've known a lot of musicians that I swear every time you see them, they're just bitching about something. And they're all they say is, oh, you know, I saw so-and-so playing, like, he sounded all right, you know, or she sounded all right. It was okay, you know, but whatever, you know, they won't book me at that place. I don't know why, you know, just like totally negative, just totally. It's just like, dude, no one wants to hear you talk right now. Like,
yeah, if you're bringing like chips on your shoulder and you don't have any salsa, then leave the chips at home.
No salsa on your shoulder?
No, you got to bring it.
That could screw up your shirt.
Yeah, maybe.
Guacamole on your shoulder. If there's someone on a gig that you're pissed at and you get called to do the gig and you just dislike the drummer, you had words with this drummer at a bar or something happened, and you can't trust yourself to put that aside, then don't do the gig. Yeah. Don't put yourself in that situation. Just, you know, don't take it. But if you do the gig, you better squash it because no one up there wants to deal with your crap.
Yeah.
It's just going to create bad vibes on stage, and the audience is going to feel it, and the band leader is going to feel it, and it's all your fault. So don't do it. To wrap this whole thing up, let's get back to being resilient, you know? All these things, all these situations, it's about resilience. It's about how mentally tough you are or how you're able to take criticism or not even criticism, just events that happen that could be negative. You could be the right one. Someone else could be wrong. It doesn't really matter what the case is. It matters about how you deal with the situation and how you bounce back. And that's about it. You know, the most successful people in this business, they just know how to deal with rejection. They know how to deal with difficult personalities, people that are absolutely wrong, and they might be right. They have to deal with tragedies and loss and everything, and they find a way to do it. It's not easy. I wouldn't say that at all, but it's something you can work on, or at least keep it in your mind and try not to freak out. You know, there's a lot of musicians that have battled with stage fright, for instance. Adele, Bob Dylan, Carly Simon, Cher, Rod Stewart, Fiona Apple. I'm probably missing some. But off the top of my head, I know that those people have had stage fright and they dealt with it. And they still might be scared. It's not that they've conquered that demon, right? They might be on stage every time and be scared. You know, like there's actors that still are scared to do their lines, but they figure out how to get through it and it adds excitement to their performance. You know, it's not that you get over these things, it's that you deal with them and you figure out how to deal with it.
You learn how to
make it work for you. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm OCD, but I've also utilized that to get good at certain things and obsess about the right things, right?
You're not OCD about your tabs and your Chrome
computer. I'm not.
You have like 1,000 tabs open right now, I guarantee it.
I have at least 50 tabs open right now, and my desk is a mess. And exactly. I'm not like a clean freak. I have other problems.
But you know where everything is, don't you?
I do. It's under this piece of tissue paper. No. Yeah, but all that being said, I think we'll wrap this episode up because it's a huge topic, just as most of our topics are, and I've said this often. And we'll probably get back into this in another way, you know, because this there's so much to talk about, right, Jake? I mean, it's just kind of the mental game. It can't be put into a short podcast.
So I wanted to give a visualization of resilience that sort of has to do with our podcast title of Pathways. If you look at a road and you look at a car, the car's tires are made out of rubber. And that's for an obvious reason. They're resilient. They bounce. They can run over things. It doesn't blow them up right away. So you got to kind of be the tire, be made of rubber. It's almost like a Bruce Lee thing, but he says water.
And if they get flat, you can patch them up sometimes, right?
You're good. You're good to go. You're the tire on the road.
All right. Good thinking. All right. So for now, we're going to go. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Questions, comments, concerns, hate mail. Do you have any of these things? You can get in touch with us at contact@theperformerspathway.com, or you can just go to our website, theperformerspathway.com. You can also use our cool new voicemail feature to say things, and it will be projected through the internet or the interweb right to our ears.